Welcome to another episode of The Cubic Report. Today we have Chuck Smith from Southern Florida, who's been on this podcast a couple times before. He is pastor of congregations at Fort Lauderdale and Vero Beach, Florida, but also, where we'll focus on the discussion today, he is senior pastor of the Caribbean, which includes Haiti, which is the object of news. So welcome to the podcast, Chuck.
Good morning, Victor. It's nice to be here. Nice to be with you again.
Well, I always enjoy talking to you because we just have very smooth conversations. And at this particular time, the conversation is poignant and important about a very, very troubled spot that's very close to the United States. Today is Thursday, March 28th, 2024, and news in Haiti, where Chuck Smith oversees, is very, very bleak. In fact, I'm not sure if I even have the news correct, but today, just on the internet, I was checking what's the latest in Haiti. And the first thing that came up was avoid all travel to Haiti due to the threat posed by kidnappings, gang violence, and the potential for civil unrest throughout the country. The security situation remains volatile in Haiti. You should consider leaving the country by commercial means, if you can do so safely. And I thought to myself, wow, that country has really gone through so much with earthquakes, hurricanes, corruption, and probably a number of other things. There may have even been a volcano tossed in there somewhere in the history. But it is a country that's gone through severe trauma and is one of the, it is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. Chuck, that's my introduction to the podcast. Not a very
well. It's a very bleak situation right now in Haiti, but I also feel like it's positive. I usually talk to our deacon over there who runs our church. Yes, we still have the church going there. It had to take a little vacation for about a year and a half because it was just too dangerous for him to be there with the kidnappings going on. But he went back about 6 months ago, and we set the church back up, and it's continuing. I talk to him almost every week to see how things are going, and we have about 37 people attending right now.
Huh.
So they, even though it's a tough situation, their eyes are fixed on probably the kingdom of God more than anyone that we know of, especially in the United States, because that is their hope.
Mm-hmm.
When it's your only hope, because their government is so corrupt, and it has been for really hundreds of years. Last 200 that they've had their freedom, they broke through. But lately it's been really, really dangerous. I flew in the last time just for a day because I knew I couldn't leave around the airport because I couldn't make it to anywhere else because they follow you. Looking to kidnap Americans
mm-hmm.
for ransom. Now, the sad part about it, the last trip I was there two and a half years ago, I wanted to bring some funds in for the Feast of Tabernacles, and I didn't know how to get them to our deacon. So I flew in on a morning flight and flew out afternoon flight and just spent an hour with him outside of the airport. We were followed then and had to drive two or three different places before he's finally able to bring me back into the airport. But on that same flight, there were only three Americans, white Americans, two nurses and myself. And I remember it very well because they were looking at me and we smiled at each other, nodded and, you know, gave greetings, but really didn't talk that much. And so they were going to work in an orphanage as mm-hmm. nurses tend to do. We've given a lot of help in the United States to Haiti and orphanages and assistance and education mm-hmm. grants and so forth. But when I got home, I found out that those two young ladies had been kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
And they were held for about 3 months before they were finally let go. Well, they were actually released because you have to pay.
So they were ransomed.
They were ransomed. The one positive I can say out of it is that the Haitian people, they're not violent people per se. If you meet most of them, and I've spent, you know, quite a few years over there, they're a kind and gentle people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that they've reached a point where they're starving to death. And there, it's so it's a survival of the fittest kind of mentality there. So the two ladies, you, unlike other kidnappers, they never had they didn't have to worry about being raped. They didn't have to worry about being mistreated, other than they just give you their food and water, which of course causes dysentery, and you get awfully sick. So they, I guess, they came upon agreed upon fun. Amount of money, which is usually they start at $1 million and usually come down to they'll accept $10,000. So I've known the stories, and most people really don't, they don't want to talk about it afterwards.
Right.
Because it's, they see the people that where they're usually taken to by the kidnappers is just with some local family, and they're allowed to keep them there. And so the people who are kidnapped generally see, man, this is a sad, sad situation. So they don't want to make it even worse for any of the people and so forth. So, but the Haitian country, I mean, it's over 10,000 square miles, but it's got over 11 and a half billion people, which is really, really crowded. Well, as a matter of fact, it's just a little smaller than the state of Maryland in the United States. And yet Maryland has 6.3 million people and they've got 11 and a half million people. So it's, but like half of the people, 7 million people are all in one town, Port-au-Prince, capital. And so it's just, people are just jammed in there, and it's just a dog eat dog world. People trying to sell anything, garbage just piled up, just guns, you know, men with guns running around all the time. And now that Barbecue, as his name is, he's a gang leader, Jimmy Chazazé. He is now pretty much running the country now that Henri, the prime minister, left and went to Puerto Rico. And so Jimmy Barbecue is just kind of running the country. And he wants peace. It's hard to say, but hard to believe, but he wants peace. He was a policeman for 10 years. And so he... doesn't want to see Henri, who was a prime minister, back in power, and doesn't want any of the people back in power. But CARICOM, I don't know if you know what CARICOM is, but it's kind of the UN of the Caribbean. Come together in the Caribbean community, 15 states. And Haiti is one of the largest members. Well, they got together and they wanted to put a seven-person board in charge of the country. And UN has backed them. United States has backed them. Henri has backed them, but Barbecue and most of the people, from what I hear, they don't want him. Henri, who was the prime minister, he's been prime minister since the 80s. So you can see he's the corruption's been going on for so long. And so the people are tired of the same old, same old. So they want to have just a three-man board of the ones that they want to put in. And the Jimmy Barbecue and some of the other gang leaders, which Jimmy's kind of the head of everybody, he says they'll put down the guns if we can put in three people that are from the people and not corrupt politicians who have not really had. And so that's a big debate. That's an argument now because they will not accept the seven-person board, and they will not accept Henri having anything to do with it. I was, when I was going over there, you were working with us and at the time, and we were setting up some educational programs. We were helping to educate and to feed quite a few people a few years ago. That's been about three or four years ago. And the country was prospering under the new president. Under the president was elected, Moïse, Jovenel Moïse. And he was an agricultural farmer, had a lot of land and had money. So he wasn't doing it for the money, but he really wanted to help the people. So he was doing a wonderful job, I must say. You could walk through the streets. You could do various things that you can't even think about now. People were seeing progress as he was setting up electrical programs to get electricity to out to the people. Water was not a problem. All these things, and then of course he was assassinated.
Yeah.
And
what year was that assassination?
Well, it would have been two and a half years ago, 3 years, 20. Let's see, 2020 or 2021.
Okay, so that was then after we had the deacon come to the pastoral development program. And so now, that was at the time that the church building was built there, in that time of peace, in that time of, let's say, respite from the violence?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, it was. And Joseph Jean, our deacon there, does a great job. And he's young in spirit. Let me put it that way. And he works as hard as anybody.
Now, Joseph Jean's there right now?
Yes, he is. He moved back about 6 months ago. And talked to him just this past week. He said, I'm not leaving. God wants me here, and I need to help these people. So he's going to stay. And they had a little problem about 2 weeks ago. As the gunmen, or the gangsters, as they call them, are taking over the country, and Mirabella is about an hour and a half drive or 2 hour drive from Port-au-Prince. So this town of Mirabella, where a church is, about 100,000 people, was fairly safe until about 2 weeks ago. He called me and said, the gunmen have come into town, and they're, he said, I'm afraid I might have to take my family out into the woods, the backwoods, as he called it, because I'm not sure it's safe. So he called me asking what to do, and I said, no, you've got a nice house. You've got a compound where the church is. There's a 10-foot wall. There's a razor wire on the top, and we dedicated that building to God as a sanctuary, and so this is where you need to stay. And God will see you through this. And so, sure enough, he called me back about 3 days later and says, hey, I can stay. I don't have to go. I'm glad I didn't go. So they caught the gangsters. And the people did in the town and just surrounded them. And, of course, there's more weapons so forth. So they took them in the middle of the town and they executed them.
Executed him. Wow.
Yeah, executed the four of them. And so, with the whole city watching, basically. And filmed it so the people, gangsters, know you come in this town, it's you're gonna get. So they stay where there's a lot more people.
Now, do they on the weekends? Do they have any kind of meetings, or is it all nothing right now during the violence?
Oh no, we have Sabbath services every Sabbath.
Right here during all this violence and all this terrible news, there's church services.
Oh yes, he has a Sabbath service every week. And right now we're supplying him with enough money to get some rice and peas and once a month some chicken, and we feed the church every Saturday. So we have food prepared on Friday for them on Saturday. So because the minimum wage in Haiti has actually gone down since I was there 2 years ago. It's $4.95 a day. Now it's $4.83 a day. So most people will spend their entire day either collecting enough work that pays a little money to buy food, or go out and scrounge food out in the woods. So by doing this, most Haitians only eat one meal a day. So by feeding them on the Sabbath, they don't have to worry Friday when they can have their meal, rest, and then the next day they come to services. And we wouldn't really consider it a feast, but to them, it does, because they didn't have to pay for it, and they can eat it in peace, and it's warm and it's hot, and it's a lot of times more than what they get during their days.
You know, what you just said right now is so very valuable for our listeners to hear, because people wonder, what's happening? What's going on? Is the country so chaotic? Because in the news we hear about the fact that there are more than 200 gangs believed to operate in Haiti. It sounds like absolute bedlam, pandemonium, and people don't even understand who's who in the zoo in that country, and they wonder if the brethren, if our church members are caught in the crosshairs. So this report, Chuck, has been very, very important for us to hear.
Well, it's encouraging to me. I was beginning to worry because I baptized a member 7 years ago that lives in Port-au-Prince. I've seen him a couple of times and contacted him. I haven't heard from him lately. He's laying pretty low. He works in the government. He's not part of the corruption that's going on there. But his family was doing okay the last time I talked to him. But the rest of our people are all in that one city. God has blessed us with safety, and God's blessed us with a place that people can go if there's storms. Because we built that building, we built it to even supersede international building code. So people that are not even with us in the church, they bring when there's a storm or anything like that, they can come to our building and
Well,
get inside.
they have such huge death tolls whenever there's something like an earthquake because the buildings are not built to any kind of earthquake code. And I remember back when they had that huge earthquake where 300,000 people, I believe, died, and there were all kinds of office buildings that collapsed. One was a United Nations office there in Port-au-Prince where 40, 50 people died. You know, UN workers died because the building was just not built very well. And no matter where you're at the building, it just all the concrete falls on you and it's over.
Yes, it's a sad situation because they don't really have codes per se. And so when I didn't have to pull any codes when I built this building, I just my past experience, I knew the codes, international codes, so I built it to those codes. And matter of fact, we superseded the codes by even putting greater emphasis on strength. So the people really feel it is a sanctuary. And so I appreciate Joseph Gene being there and helping the community. We've had some tragic stories of a young girl. She was, I saw her grave, which was just dug out with shovels and maybe 2 foot deep, 3 foot deep, covered because she starved to death. She was a granddaughter of one of our members. And just her parents just didn't have enough food, so they sent her to her grandmother's, and she was a little bit in the country out there, and but she was too sick by that time, and she died by the time I got there. We had tried to send them, so that's why I wanted to make sure people have helped in United. They've helped outside of United, other churches. I know you know Brian Drawbaugh.
Oh,
Brian Drawbaugh
yes.
been of he and Shelby have been incredible in helping the people of
Well, they are
Haiti.
incredible people in how they've helped across many, many lines and
Oh, you aren't kidding. Yeah, he's matter of fact, he does speak French. So
Oh.
he was over there and spent half of the Feast of Tabernacles in a mosquito-ridden, hard time in with no air conditioning or anything else in Haiti. But he did it because he loves the people, and they've been able to help us. And with the money we're able to get from a United Assistance subsidy, we're able to help those people, and not only those people, but other people by buying in bulk when we can. And so, if somebody's needing food and starving, we're not going to let them starve. We can give them a little bucket to take some grain out and take home and so
Well,
forth.
I just wanted to comment to everybody here that Chuck Smith, before he entered the full-time ministry, was in the construction business. And so he looks upon every church as not only, the people, but they talk about a church being a building. That's how he sees it, as to
Yes.
a place where they meet. And he has been so helpful in getting this particular building, when we call it a sanctuary. It's not just a spiritual sanctuary, it's literally a physical sanctuary for people to survive in. And I just really appreciate what Chuck has done. Is there anything more that could be done? I mean, frankly, Chuck, I have not heard very much officially about what's happening. So that's why I want to do this podcast, because people ask me or ask others, what's going on in Haiti? And honestly, I know it's bad. Everybody knows it's bad. And you look, turn on the news, and it's either Ukraine, Hamas, or Haiti. And we know we have people there. We have a congregation of people. In fact, a fairly solid congregation. But I had very little information. So this will be very, very helpful to everyone about what's going on.
Yes, I'm hoping to, if we can continue to assist them, even in because there you can rent land. And I'd like to see, and Joseph and I have both talked about renting some land near us, near our sanctuary, so that we can actually grow some crops. and bring some seed in and get people to raise their food. And so we're hoping you have to have it close because otherwise it'll be just taken over by
right.
people.
Right, stolen.
But we're hoping to get the people to see a greater vision than just how can I survive. But of course we do preach the kingdom of God, and that is what they're all looking for. But also we'd like to, as Christ said, I came that you may have life and live it more abundantly. So our job is to try to help the people, not only spiritually but physically, live life more abundantly. And by helping them with not only education, which we started to do when we had the program of teaching computers and English. We're wanting to, matter of fact, Joseph Jean is teaching English to some of the members there. So that if you know English, you are in the top five of the people in Haiti, which allows you to work different jobs. You can get better jobs. You can have connection to online services. So this is one of the ways in which we're hoping to help our people, let them be able to be educated in such a way that they're not limited to, well, where can I find food today? So we're trying to get them to have that vision. But if you've done that for all your life, because the sad part is life expectancy is so short there in Haiti. Matter of fact, the median age, and that's what's shocking, the median age in Haiti is 23 years of age.
Wow.
The United States is 39, Victor. That's, that's just a little less than half of the median age. So you can see it's just there's people, but they don't have any hope. So you can see where they just, okay, if I steal, if I do any of this, that at least I can get by. So this is what we're wanting to help. Now, I know 38 people, that's not much, but we started with six. So let's see what we can do, and if God will bless us and give us
Well, I applaud you for what you have done in the countries that we work in, that are like this, and even in Africa where we have worked at the Feast of Tabernacles. They had the variety show, the fun show, and everything, and it was interesting the kinds of themes were in the skits. You know, we have skits that are kind of funny and everything. One of the skits was how to handle the orphan in your family, you know, because their parents died and now you have them. And it talked about the interactions between the kids. It was really funny stuff. But, I mean, who would have a skit about taking in the orphan in your family, because so many people do that? Another one was sourcing food. You know, it was a skit, this guy going all day long trying to source food, either in garbage or leftovers, or doing a little job to earn a little bit of money so he could source food, because 80% of their income goes for survival, for food. So it was interesting to see the different types of themes that were in the life of the people. But one thing that I am really, really grateful to see here, because I wasn't even sure if you were able to communicate with them, and it appears that you're able to electronically by either phone, WhatsApp. I don't know. How do you communicate with them?
Usually it's through WhatsApp. They have. Now, it's amazing the people are poor as can be, but out of every family, someone has a cell phone.
That's true for the whole world.
Yes, it is. They can get it through, because they stay in communication. If they have a relative here in the States, they can make it possible. Of course, the reception, I get about every other word said, because there are minutes, they buy minutes over there.
Yeah.
And their minutes are unlike ours. It's like you could get 10 minutes for one of our pennies. And you say, wow, that's awfully cheap. When you hear the service, you realize why it's, it's so cheap. It's just, it's really bad. So we are setting up, as we also are doing in Guyana, some of the other countries, we are setting up super hotspots. That's a hotspot that can pick up the nearest towers, satellites, and so by doing this, they have unlimited access to watch our sermons, to watch any of messages, to communicate, and we're bringing this to our churches in the Caribbean. So they're no longer having to see how many minutes, because this is one cost, $99 for an entire month, and you have unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
And so even in the interior of Guyana, where we have a church, we're setting that up. So now that they can communicate, they can be in touch and watch our live services.
Oh, you do it video too.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. We've brought laptops that have been donated by various people in the church to the Caribbean. So we take them there. Then we get the hotspots. They hook that up, and they just can't believe they are now in touch with the first world.
Mm-hmm.
I plan on doing this also to Haiti during the coming year. We were so up in the air because of the violence and everything else. And you have to be so careful because these things cost about $300 or $400. That's half a year's salary,
mm-hmm,
in Haiti. So you have to be very careful because people are starving, though. They're stealing. They stole a bunch of stuff while we were out of the country. They stole a lot of stuff at our church.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just having to deal with that and replace it. And now we're there. So
one thing that, Chuck, I think that people would also be very, very happy to hear is that people are doing more than just surviving. They're actually doing things and educating, and life goes on. I find the same in Ukraine, is that there's a war going on, and there may have been a rocket attack the night before, but the people are still going to school. They're still going to work. I talk to them on the telephone. They talk about things sort of matter of fact, like it was just a bad storm that came through, but it was a rocket attack, you know, and that a hypersonic missile, whatever, that came through the day before. And yet they're kind of inured to that. They kind of get, I hate to use the word used to that, but that's just life for them. And one thing to appreciate for us, but it's interesting what you had to say, because our people here need to know about what life is like for the Haitian people and the brethren in particular that you're responsible for.
Oh, and we have so many young children too, young kids, and because most families have 5, 6, 8 kids, mm-hmm, children, and so you can't feed them, so people have to take them in, like you said. That's interesting. They would put a play that way because to them that's just part of life, is, mm-hmm, going out around you for food, mm-hmm, all day. They have a lot of mango trees there. And you can see when mangoes are there, when I'm there in May or June, oh, they're just people climbing the trees, just getting baskets and baskets of mango because they can have all they eat, and then they take them to town and can sell them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the trees are just everywhere. So that's a blessing for them as a people. Because, I mean, compare that to Dominican Republic. They share the island. Dominican Republic is very prosperous. I mean, they have all-inclusive resorts. They have all this, but then you go half of the country and there's Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all due to the government being so corrupt and taking. Because most of the dictators, whether it is Baby Doc, Papa Doc, Aristotle, all those who, they come in, they're elected, they take all the money that they can, and just before the people are going to riot and tear down the walls again, they jump over to France,
uh-huh,
and with millions of dollars that they've stolen from the people. But as the locals have told me there, the difference is now they would rather have a dictator than what they have now, because, mm-hmm, when there's a dictator, there was no violence except for the dictator's enemies. They kept the people happy, so they did. And so now it's just anarchy everywhere. I mean, now, so the Port-au-Prince airport's closed. I mean, they've taken it over.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an airport up north, Cap Haitien, that you can fly to, but it's also very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Very.
So
you might have read the book, which is a classic, Tuesdays with Maura.
No, I didn't. Tell us about
Mitch
it.
Mitch Albom wrote it many years ago. And it was about he's Jewish, and he made this trip and visited a friend of his who was dying of cancer. It's a very good book. We're definitely worth a read. And it tells Tuesdays, wait, go and spend Tuesdays and just say, pointed you to what life could be like, and make the most of your time. Well, Mitch Albom has been a successful writer. So just last week, he had to get a hold of a senator here in Florida because he was in Haiti. He had an orphanage there with 10 other Americans. He called the embassy when the embassy was going to evacuate and said, "Hey, I've got 10 people here and we need it out." He said, "Don't worry, hang tight, we'll be there." Well, they just left him. So the UN people left. He was stuck there, so he called a senator from Florida, and they flew a chopper in.
Uh-huh.
Because you couldn't go to any airport, so they flew a chopper in and rescued all 10 of those because they would have been taken over. And Mitch Albom was there with them. And so it doesn't matter if you've got money or you don't have money or whatever. If you're stuck over in Haiti, you're stuck over.
The Dominican Republic, it showed in the news, you know, people trying to escape, refugees, 33,000 trying to cross the border into Dominican Republic. Is the DR doing anything, or what's the policy?
Well, they usually open that border because people from Haiti will come over and work since they're so cheap. They work so cheap. And then at night they go back over to the other side, or they'll come over for a week, gather things, and then take it to the market there in Haiti. So, or bring it from Haiti and bring it in to sell it in Dominica. But now, because of the mass amount of people who are rushing to that border, they have to have guards there, and they just, they're keeping the Haitian down because they would overrun the country.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many that want to get out that situation.
So, Chuck, what do you think is going to happen in the short term, the next 3 months or so? Do you think that barbecue will stay in, or are they going to have the seven-man commission, the three-man commission? What's going to happen?
If they put the seven-man commission in, it's going to continue to be just like it is. Mm-hmm. There's going to be riot. The gangs, they've got more weapons than the army or anybody else. For a while, the people I was talking to there kept asking me, "Well, why don't the United States bring their army in and settle this?" I said, we're not going to go over there. We're not going to do that. That's not the Vietnam. And we learned that. And I said, no. And so they keep it. They want to help. Of course, they thought Kenya was going. You probably read that.
Mm-hmm.
The UN sanctioned Kenya. And we offered $300 million to Kenya's army to go in. Well, when they took it to the people, Kenya, they didn't want to go in because then it would be blacks killing blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't, because you are, I mean, it would be a war, and there would be hundreds of thousands of people, because the gangsters aren't going to give up. Mm-hmm. They live decent because they just take what they want and everything else. But the only way that I see peace, besides Christ coming back, is for them to let them have the three-man government and see what it will do. It can't be any worse.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be any worse than it is now. And if they put the seven-man in, all that's going to do is cause rioting and shooting and killing. So I hope they can find some peace so we can continue to do the work God has given us to do.
Where can people find out more timely information from you? Do you have a website?
Well, I have UC, we well the UCG Caribbean website. They can also do, but they can also just talk to me personally, as a lot of people do. They will email me at chucks.ucg@gmail.com, or my phone number's out there, 615-848-7372, because I love to talk to people about it, because I'm not looking for them to give money or anything else, but the more prayers we get, the more God hears about these precious people, 37 people in Haiti, and hope to grow more. It's like what was saying the scriptures about the widow that just keeps asking.
Persistent widow.
Yes, persistent. So I want to be persistent. I pray every day for these people, and it's a church that I want to see carry on till Christ comes. So, I mean, I spent all that time building that sanctuary with my own hands, framing it and designing it. And so I would like to see us, and it will hold about 250, 300 people. 500 if you had to have people in there.
Now, Chuck, give us the the email again.
My email is chuckscs.ucg@gmail.com.
Okay, because I'm going to include this information in the show notes with this podcast so that people can have that.
Yeah, because we just had people who were Haitian descent, Wilner August in Maryland. He put together, with Andy Duran, put together a fundraiser and called people who wanted to help in Haiti, and they were able to raise enough money so that we are able to replace the stuff that has been stolen and take care of Haiti for the immediate future, because people were passionate about it.
Mm-hmm. People are passionate. They just want to know where. And we're going to talk about this. I appreciate your taking the time here on this podcast to do that, because I actually have been a little bit tuned out from what's happening in Haiti. And I said, I've got to call Chuck. I've got to find out what's going on there. And I appreciate the fact that there are people at the grassroots helping out with what's happening in Haiti. Thank you very much.
Well, I want to thank all the people, because when we built the sanctuary, I didn't go to United because it was my idea. And I said, wow, I don't know that this is the right thing to do. I didn't go and ask you. I didn't ask money. So I just asked people. We put some money in and other people started joining. So we were able to pay for everything on getting that sanctuary built without asking the church any money, because there were so many volunteers that said, hey, I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of that issue work. And so we were able to build that, and those people still today are willing to help.
You know, Chuck, one thing is that there are so many needs in the world, and people think that you're running out of money. But, you know, the money is there when there is a need. You know, people are there to help out, and they help out where there is responsible management, where the resources go to where the people need to be helped. And so we appreciate what you're doing, and that's how we're working with LifeNets too. You know, we have people that we know that we've known for decades, in some cases going back to Ambassador College days, that we work with that are responsibly handling things.
I must say, LifeNets, we have contributed to it personally, because we've seen what you've been willing to do, and I also see what's been done in Haiti by other companies or whatever you call this that you have, but they're so corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Hardly, you know, there's not even 25 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
That goes to this, and when someone asked me about LifeNets, I said, well, yeah, it's 100%, except whatever paperwork they have to print. But yeah, I said, it's wonderful, because it's not like that in 99% of the...
No, in the nonprofit world, you see, how do they afford all those TV commercials? That's got to cost them a lot of money, and it does cost them a lot of money, up to 40-50%. Of the donations that come in. And with LifeNets, if it's to a project like Haiti, if it's designated to that, 100% will go to that, because we want to make sure that it's adequately used and fulfills the wishes of the donors.
Yeah, absolutely. So I thank you for that. But no, I just ask people, just remember Haiti in their prayers, and see what God is doing, and also pray thy kingdom come.
Right, that's the biggie. Okay, well, listen, this has been very, very helpful. This has been very moving to hear from you, Chuck, and I appreciate the time that you spent here on the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you, Victor. I appreciate you.
Thank you for listening to us today on The Cubic Report. We welcome you to share this podcast and tell your friends about it. We can be found on a variety of platforms, including Apple and Google Podcasts, Pandora, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, and many other platforms. You can easily find us at any browser address box by typing in the words The Cubic Report, and there we are. Remember, Cubic is spelled K-U-B-I-K. So we'd love to hear from you. Write to us at vcubic@gmail.com. That's vkubik@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening. Come back soon for more.